This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is all theater. This is all just political theater.
Political theater. Political theater.
Pure political
theater.
Theater.
Political theater.
The nefarious,
significant, and protracted
political theater for political theater's sake.
I yield back.
From Washington, this is Political Theater. Roll Call's review of the spectacle of politics on Capitol Hill and across the country. I'm Jason Dick.
It's almost the 4th of July when Americans celebrate their independence, and yet in the Capitol, we're still dealing with some Confederates among the National Statuary Hall and other parts of the seat of government. The House is considering legislation this week, right before the holiday recess, to remove some of those busts and statues of Confederates and white supremacists and people who were advocates of slavery. It's been a long process to get here. And our own Chris Marquette, staff writer here at CQ Roll Call, has been following this even in days when he wasn't a CQ Roll Call reporter, because he has background at a regional newspaper down south and saw some of the the context that would serve him well in covering this topic. So, Chris, welcome to Political Theater.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So let's talk a little bit about just some of the background. The House is considering legislation to remove some busts or statues of either Confederates or white supremacists this week. It's also part of the legislative branch funding bill because, you know, it is not cheap to move these things around the country, and this makes it a lot easier for the states that, you know, donated them or sent them here to figure out what to do with them. But like, let's talk about some of the folks that are going to be removed from the Capitol grounds. The first one that comes to mind is that Roger Taney, who is a former Chief Justice of the United States. There's a bust of him in the old Supreme Court chamber, which is on the Senate side of the Capitol. That will be removed if this legislation is approved, and it will be swapped out for Thurgood Marshall, who's the first Black Supreme Court Justice. Let's talk about Taney and what he is famous / infamous for.
Yeah, so he was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court when they issued the Dred Scott decision, which is arguably the worst decision in the history of the Supreme Court.
Right. Yeah, this is the case where Taney wrote it. It was a majority opinion, a 7-2 opinion in which Dred Scott had sued for his freedom. He's arguing that he had, although born a slave, he had lived in a free state, he and his wife. And the decision came down that from Taney's court that he was not only couldn't be considered free, but couldn't be considered a citizen. Anything else Roger Taney did was going to come after that in the obit.
Yeah, and Taney would be in this legislation, H.R. 3005, you know, this legislation would replace Taney with Thurgood Marshall, who's the, you know, the first person of color to be a Supreme Court justice. And that's something that we saw, you know, if you go to the Maryland State House, you know, back a couple of years ago, they removed a statue of Taney, and you know, there's a prominent plaza leading up to the State House in Annapolis that prominently features Thurgood Marshall. So, you know, this is in keeping with that, and you know, the majority leader, Steny Hoyer, being from Maryland, is on this measure as an author.
And some points of distinction too. Taney was not a Confederate. I mean, he never served in the Confederate Army or the Confederate government. You know, his authorship of the Dred Scott case is what has gotten him, you know, on sort of cross purposes. You know, with some of the, you know, what the evolution we see of people's rights, and certainly in, you know, in the last couple of years, with the, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd's murder and so forth. So
as you mentioned, like, you know, he wasn't a member of the Confederacy. The legislation also does, you know, if approved, would remove all statues of individuals who voluntarily served in the Confederate States of America from display in the United States Capitol. And, you know, it's important to mention that, you know, the legislative branch appropriations report language, you know, does something similar, but it specifically points out people by name, and, you know, it would direct the architect of the Capitol to remove statues and or busts in the Capitol that represent, this is a quote from the report language, that represent figures who participated in the Confederate Army or government, as well as statues of white supremacists, Charles A. Koch, John C. Calhoun, and James Paul Clark, and the bust of Roger B. Taney. So, you know, it has overlap with the bill that's being considered today, actually,
as we're speaking, and then it'll move to over to the Senate. So we talked about Taney. Before we talk about two of the Confederate figures from Mississippi, Jefferson Davis and James George, let's talk about the three others that you mentioned: Charles A. Koch, former governor of North Carolina; John C. Calhoun, former vice president of the United States; and James P. Clark, former governor and senator of Arkansas. Let's start with A. Koch. As governor of North Carolina, I mean, he gave this very infamous speech that backed up a lot of his efforts as a political figure in North Carolina to disenfranchise Black people in North Carolina, bragging about it as a way to help them. That in order to help with what he dubbed the Negro problem, that basically people's rights would be taken away, and they would be sort of discarded and just sort of provided for by, you know, basically reducing them to you know, barely even wards of the state. And he bragged about this, and it's if you look up speech North Carolina, you know, governor, the Negro problem, it comes up, and it is fairly representative of a lot of attitudes of a lot of white supremacists at the turn of the century. This is when segregation had really taken hold after Reconstruction basically was over, and Jim Crow had kind of solidified its grip on particularly the Deep South and the sort of border states, southern states like the Carolinas. And it's amazing because, again, you know, A. Koch was known as somebody who pushed universal education for white people, at least, and was known as somebody who helped build a more modern North Carolina after the 19th century. But his white, truly white supremacist views are particularly odious in the kind of prism of history. And that's why he's on the way out, too, apparently. So let's talk about Calhoun, somebody from who predated the Civil War at this point, also not a Confederate, and what some of the things that he's known for.
Yeah, so vice president of the United States, he died before the Confederacy established, but in reporting my story about back on the Mississippi and South Carolina statues and Statuary Hall, one of the history professors that I spoke to, Carol Emberton from SUNY Buffalo, told me that although he died before the Confederacy was established, he basically was responsible for the worldview of the Confederacy, which is, you know, white supremacy, all those kinds of things that, you know, whites are superior to Black people, and you know, obviously very, you know, backwards thoughts.
Yeah, he also during his long service in government, I mean, he helped draw up plans to go to war with England in the War of 1812. So he had been in government service for a long time, but had a fairly radical view of states' rights that was picked up later on by many people who supported the Confederacy or served in the Confederacy. I mean, his view on it was that any state could nullify a congressional action because the Constitution was nothing but a compact among the states, and the states' rights ran supreme. And that was, you know, one of the prevailing thoughts that southern states, the states that seceded, said, you know, like they picked up a lot of the reasoning there. And again, not a Confederate, but certainly was somebody whose ideas fed into a lot of the Confederacy. And before we get to the Mississippi folks, for which you're the most familiar with, Chris, and let's talk about James P. Clark just a little bit. He is a former governor and senator of Arkansas, also known for white supremacist views. His family has come out in, you know, sort of as wanting to distance themselves from a lot of his racist views. And this this is a case where the House legislation is kind of complementary to what's going on in Arkansas anyway, because Arkansas has already passed legislation to replace their two statues, one of which is James P. Clark with musician Johnny Cash, the Man in Black himself.
I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
And civil rights icon Daisy Bates. So that even though Arkansas had like sort of started this process, certainly the authorization in Congress and the money that the legislative branch appropriations bill will provide will give it a little bit of a boost. All right, on to your specialty, being a Mississippi, former Mississippi regional reporter. Let's talk about these statues, but also just give us a little sense of your history, your time in Mississippi, because it was a little while ago, but it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, so in 2015, I covered high school football in southern rural Mississippi, which is called Pearl River County. The paper that I worked for was the Picayune Item. And yeah, that was, you know, an interesting experience. It's very different from Washington, D.C. And, you know, you definitely, you know, got a sense of, you know, saw a lot of Confederate flags and things of that nature that were, you know, sympathetic to, you know, figures from the Confederacy. There's, you know, there's counties in the state that are named after, you know, different Confederate officials. There's James Z. George, the, you know, one of the Mississippi former senators who has a statue of himself in Statuary Hall. There's, you know, a house that he lived in that, you know, a school named after him, a bunch of stuff, you know, over the state that's dedicated to him. And obviously Jefferson Davis, who is the other Mississippi statue. Neither of them were born in Mississippi. Both of them represented Mississippi as senators, and Jefferson Davis was obviously the president of the Confederacy. James Z. George was a Confederate colonel. But, you know, James Z. George is actually a lot less well-known than Jefferson Davis. You know, Confederate colonel, went on to become a U.S. senator. But one of the things that is particularly odious about him is that he chaired Mississippi's Democratic Executive Committee from 1875 to 1876 and crafted the Mississippi Plan, which was a campaign of voter intimidation and violent repression. And he's also widely credited as, you know, constructing, you know, Mississippi's 1890 Constitution, which was very, very successful and effective in repressing the black vote. And that 1890 Constitution that George was widely cited as the architect of effectively reduced the number of qualified black Mississippi voters down from 147,000 to 8,000. And that was an action that resulted in a white electoral majority in every county. And this is according to a 2017 report by the University of Mississippi's Committee on History and Contextualization. So he was so successful in repressing the black vote that other southern states repeated and basically copied his plan in states like Alabama, Louisiana, Virginia, and the Carolinas. So he's really a notorious figure in just quelling black voting rights.
What's so fascinating to me about this history in Mississippi also is that, you know, Mississippi during Reconstruction elected the very first black person to Congress. Hiram Revels was a senator, and it was almost a kind of a model of like of what, you know, sort of the Reconstruction meant to a lot of people, which is that the you know, previously people who were enslaved, people of color, could participate in the government, and that, like, as quickly as it was established, you know, within 20 years, I mean, the hammer came down, thanks to people like James E. George, and just really like kind of, I mean, quashed any kind of hope for, you know, like there being representation of Black people in Mississippi for decades.
And there was also a lot of like political violence, you know, at the polls and things of that nature. And George was a skilled lawyer, and he actually was the Chief Justice of the Mississippi Supreme Court for a bit. But he was a skilled lawyer in the sense of he was able to kind of make sure that the federal agents and federal arm of the United States government, he kept it at arm's length while these kinds of things were going on, and almost kind of towed the line by saying, hey, you know, like things are going okay. It's not that bad. The political violence, you know, there's not much of that. He kind of like whitewashed that and was able to kind of, you know, craft this plan to get, you know, get people of color out of elected office by, you know, disenfranchising the vote and voter intimidation, everything like that. But he did it in a skilled way as to not arise or alert the federal government, and they never really came down to kind of intervene on those actions. So he was a skilled kind of negotiator on that front, or I guess, you know, con man, or however you want to frame it, but he was skilled in being able to get what he wanted.
And I think it's also important to note that Congress is sort of like the outlier on removing some of these statues, because I mean, you mentioned that the Taney representation in Annapolis and in the Maryland capital was taken out and replaced with Marshall. And in Jefferson Davis, you know, he was in the Kentucky state capital for decades and was removed a couple years back. So, I mean, the Congress is like the outlier here. Now, they have made some, you know, like changes where the speaker has her authority. I mean, she's the one who removed the portraits of former Confederates and the speaker's lobby and so forth recently. That was under her purview, like removing that art. But this stuff we're talking about is legislation. Go ahead.
That's a good point. So the National Statuary Hall collection, each state gets to pick two statues that of a person that best represents their state. Mississippi selected Jefferson Davis, the former Confederate president, and James E. George, former Confederate colonel, and, you know, author of a plan that disenfranchised, you know, so many Black people. To remove these statues, and to your point, it requires the state legislature to pass a resolution, and the governor needs to sign off on it. Of each state for each statue. So back when I did the story about the Mississippi, you know, the two Mississippi statues represented by Confederates, I asked the entire Mississippi delegation, and the only member who said, you know, he wants them removed was Benny Thompson, the only person of color in the Mississippi congressional delegation, and the only Democrat in the Mississippi congressional delegation. And everybody else either didn't respond to my questions about that, or just said, it's up to the states. You know, it's not my decision. Why should I weigh in? So a lot of them on these kinds of controversial topics that will get them nothing but backlash in their home state, like Mississippi, they kind of, you know, couch their stance on the fact that, hey, it's not in Congress's hands, it's in the state's hands.
Which is a little bit of a cop out, because they are there to represent people in their states. We can continue to hold their feet to the fire, because then the question becomes, once these statues are removed, who do they get replaced with? Which is another, you know, sort of interesting question, and whether or not they, if they're somebody who is a, you know, sort of appeals to the broader spectrum of the state or doesn't. So it seems like this fight, I don't know, you probably get some people saying like, oh, this is cancel culture or whatever. But I mean, like, as you've, you know, stated through like, you know, we're looking at, you know, almost to the dawn of the Republic, we've had these fights, you know, like over, you know, the over white supremacy, over states' rights, over the, you know, however you want to call it, voting rights. And this is just the latest iteration of it. It's not by any means, you know, just something that, you know, kind of burst out because of a bunch of woke people on Twitter or something like that. This is a long-standing fight and just the latest battle in it. Well, Chris, thanks so much for walking us through it. I know it's there's a lot. It seems like a lot happens on this beat real quickly, and then it sort of lays dormant for a while and then starts back up. You know, this week we didn't expect that they would be considering two pieces of legislation concerning this, but here we are. So appreciate it, and thanks for, I'm glad that your coverage of high school football in Mississippi has come in handy and has been able to inform your reporting on whether we have white supremacists in National Statuary Hall or not. So thanks much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.